Fashion.
I'm Abby.
I'm Evan.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to The Fashion Hags.
We love to love
and love to hate
all things fashion.
Hey.
Welcome to episode 49 of The Fashion Hags.
That got way bigger than I thought.
It kind of almost got away from me.
That was like a sports almost.
Super Bowl 51.
XXIVVIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIIII
Jason.
Pew, pew, pew. Bow, 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 bow.
Are you ready to podcast or something?
The only thing that reminds me of that, it's not sports, it's Bring It On starring Kirsten Dunst.
That is sports.
That's misogynistic of me to not think of cheerleading as a sport.
That is as close to sports as you're going to get, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
They convinced Missy it was a sport, so she didn't think it was a sport. The school has no gymnastics team.
This is the last resort. If you gave me time, I could probably say the whole little chant.
I watched a Bring It On movie that was on Netflix recently. It was like Bring It On World something, yeah. I don't know, and it was like some big international competition from all over the world, and in a very awesome way they actually had real cheerleading teams from around the world compete. It was online competition, they were like with streaming video. That was the concept of the tournament that they were taking place. Mm-hmm. So they actually had ones from the Czech Republic, from Brazil, from Singapore or whatever, and they all competed, and they scouted them out, and they all got to be in the movie, and that's
wild.
Fun. Also, and the rest of the movie was just shit. Well, of course. I watched the whole thing.
I think you stopped watching a Bring It On movie for the plot after the first Bring It On.
Over the first 10 minutes of the first Bring It On.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thin thread that they're grasping onto on that. But yeah.
Well, the first Bring It On is about cultural appropriation of black culture.
It's true.
So good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I didn't realize that that's why I love that movie so much until much later on in life.
It touched you on a level that you didn't even know.
That I didn't even know.
You didn't even know.
Yeah, it was very deep ingrained in my spirit.
White people stealing other people's shit.
Yeah.
On that note, I'm going to quickly give a shout out to the Unravel podcast. Yeah. You messaged us recently.
Yes.
And I finally got a chance to listen to this. The roundtable episode of what? Maybe they have more than one. I have to look into this more. I just listened to the one they told me to listen to. Jasmine messaged us on Instagram and said, "Hey, we saw you guys did an episode about cultural appropriation. We did one too. Have a listen." And I did, and it was amazing. So informative. So awesome to hear these three ladies who have different Native American ancestry, and then there was even some Hispanic and Latinx stuff going on too, and it was very exciting and super interesting to hear these three ladies talk about cultural appropriation. And I'm definitely going back and listening to more, so check out
Unravel.
And thanks for the shout out
and
too.
Thank you for messaging us. It was awesome. I really appreciated it.
They're not Vancouver, are they?
New York.
No, okay. Yeah, they were down in the States because they're all Native Americans.
Right.
Was in USA America.
And I listened to another episode with the curator of the Native Fashion Now exhibit that was going on at the National Museum of the American Indian when I was in New York, and I didn't go.
And you didn't get to go?
Were there for like 5 minutes.
Literally, yeah. But I hope that in the Native Fashion Now 2, there's some Evan Ducharme in there.
Oh!
Keep that in.
They did talk about some Métis stuff in that Unravel episode, which was nice.
They did.
Yeah, they poo-pooed a whole bunch of stuff, which was nice. But they also gave options if you're looking to not culturally appropriate things. They gave you options, which is also lovely. Anyway, shout out to them. It was great. We'll listen to more. Check it out. We can just catch up with each other now. What's going on? Katie, what's going on with you?
It was my birthday.
Yeah.
I just had a birthday. I kept telling everybody about when I met your niece at the club the other day.
Yes.
And I was like, how old do you think I'm turning? Because her sister also had a birthday. I think her birthday was today.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, how old are you turning? And she said whatever age it was that I've instantly forgotten. And I was like, well, how old do you think I'm turning? And she's like, 33. And I was like, what?
And even her face was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I am actually. She was like, oh, it was weird. We had this weird, like that was the she end was of the right conversation.
You were right. She didn't know she was right, and we freaked each other out. Oh, it was great.
Yeah, it was hilarious. But yeah, it was fun. I had a birthday, and
another tour around the sun.
Yeah, another trip, and it was really fun. I gathered all of my pals, or whoever was game, to a softball game, air quotes.
Throw the ball around.
I mean, it was a real game, but we, you know, loosely had the rules down, and we, you know, mostly knew how to
kind
play.
Kind of what happening, yeah.
I used to play slow pitch fairly regularly, but it was definitely a beer league situation, and there was a lot of beer happening, and it was really, really fun, but I am so sore now, even 2 days later. My shoulder is so sore. My abs are sore from laughing and running and catching and everything. Everyone that I've talked to is like, I'm
hurting. Physical exertion after the age of 30.
Know, it was hard.
Changes.
It was really hard. I was doing, I did a quick yoga practice at home in my living room today. And I'm so glad I didn't go to a class. I was just doing it at home. Because I got from down dog, and you pull one leg forward and you do like the low lunge.
Yeah.
And as I'm pulling forward, I was like, oh, God.
Oh, that's the stuff.
Oh, shit. Like, I'm like yelling at myself. There's no one around. I was by myself, in my underwear in my living room. Thank God. Oh, fuck. This hurts. Feel better now. Definitely feel better now.
Well, if you come to my yoga class, which is me and a bunch of 65-year-old people, it would have been fine. But if you go to another yoga class in the city, you would have gotten some side eye.
Oh, for sure. That's why I did not go somewhere else in the city.
Especially in your neighborhood.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Super ultra fit people down there.
Yeah.
I'll just move my couch.
There you go. Exactly. You got a living room. You got a computer screen. You're good to go.
Actually, I use a podcast called 20 Minute Download.
Oh, nice.
And I just have a little speaker, and I just play it through the speaker. And I've done it for a while.
So it's just audio?
It's all audio. So there's a bunch that I kind of go back to. This was like the easiest intro
straight
to
up. Yeah, that's what I'm in with a bunch of 65-year-olds. That's the one I'm doing.
It was really nice, but I was like, it was audible. It was not for public.
Oh, well.
But it was really, really fun. Yeah. And I should shout out to my sister, Shelly. Happy birthday, Shelly. Yeah. She's my twin sister. Guys, big reveal.
So also has the same birthday?
She has my birthday.
She took who came first.
You? I did.
Okay. Well, so what's yours first?
That was my first.
Whatever, it was 3 minutes or whatever.
They count.
Still counts.
Totally. So, happy birthday, Shelly.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Well, happy birthday, Catherine.
Yeah, thanks. What have you guys been up to? Mm-hmm. You had birthday celebrations over here.
I did.
As well.
My daughter turned 3, which was great. We had a number. I kept getting confused why Marco kept asking if today? My birthday is today? I'm like, no, your birthday was yesterday or whatever, last Saturday or whatever. And then we realized, we had a cake at my in-laws. We had a cake at her cousin, with her cousins. We had a cake, a party. We opened presents here. Then we had a party so it stretched out for over a week. No wonder she's confused. She doesn't know a birthday is a one day. She's just 3, so she's only kind of grasping the idea of a birthday and a party and presents and yada, 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 all this stuff. And we're making it very confusing because we keep quote birthdays at her, and then being like, "What are you talking about? You have one."
Yeah, you get one.
How are you
day.
Confused? Oh, that's why you're confused. Because she had 3 cakes. So, oh well, what do you do? So that was fun. But I have something we can talk maybe briefly about. Katie and I got to go to the factory.
Oh yeah,
which was so exciting. Got to do what I call QC.
QC, quality control.
Quality control.
Check, whatever you want to make that C stand for.
Where we just got to look at a bunch of new samples for things and then also look at a bunch of other things.
Yeah, we picked up our new samples for the next,
next year.
Our samples run for the next year. And we're like, oh, I want this one and I want that one and this one.
Thumbs up.
And then we did, the QC was fun.
It was a lot, and it's literally going off a checklist, taking things out, looking at measurements, making sure there's a size difference between the small and the medium, making sure that's okay.
It's created properly. And
it has the right labels in it, and, you know, it's all the stitching's there, and sometimes it's not, and then you gotta fix it, or tell the factory that, oh, you forgot this part, or this part isn't right, or what happened here? So there were some bumps.
Some of it is just annoying things that have to be checked, but some of it is like you legally are required to have this on your garment if you're gonna sell it.
Yes.
So there is a bunch of stuff that you have to be, quite
really on top of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of it is like, oh, this is within a half an inch. We'll let it go. It's fine.
Yeah. Or you've made this one item 5,000 times by now, just different fabrics. Like, yeah, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It looks great. Yeah, yeah, the collars line up. It's great.
Yeah. We looked at 40 out of, 150, and they were all great.
I'm sure you're fine.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah, it is kind of cool going out there. It used to be right in town.
It was in bike distance for you, and
now it's
almost walking distance for me.
Yeah, now it's farther.
Now it's a bit farther, but we made a day of it, an adventure.
Plus, we can always make an excuse to go to IKEA if we need
to. That's right, next to IKEA. That's great.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
That's about it for me. Quality control and birthday parties.
Birthday cake.
Yeah. What about, which we just had some leftover upstairs.
Yeah.
What about you, Yvonne?
I did a photo shoot, and I had a performance this weekend.
Oh, yeah. About the walk for reconciliation was on Sunday after I started seeing all the videos on Instagram. And I was like, oh, shit, I wanted to go to that. That's what you were performing at.
Very poorly advertised.
Yeah, maybe.
There was a Facebook event. That's how I knew about it.
Yeah, I saw the Facebook event.
And probably just because you said you were going or somebody said they were going.
Yeah. Saturday.
As soon as I saw the date, I was like,
pretty
sure I'm not going to make that.
Yeah.
Day after my birthday.
Maybe not.
I don't think I'm going to make
early on a Sunday morning.
9 a.m. Yeah.
I don't think so. So I didn't.
Yeah. Well, on Saturday, I photographed the whole collection, the atavism, as you do after doing a collection. It was a really nice day. She got to shoot indoors. We usually do like location shoots, which is really beautiful, but also a pain in the ass.
A lot of work, yeah.
So it's nice to just like be indoors, like playing music, being chill, ordered pizza.
Have a bathroom nearby.
Exactly.
You know, it's nice.
Yeah, you don't think about those things sometimes.
No.
Not have to like travel to change.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Schlep a bunch of stuff across town.
Yeah. And then on Sunday, I performed at the March for Reconciliation. It was insane. There was like apparently 70,000 people marched.
Yeah, there was a shitload of people.
Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
shit, that's amazing.
Yeah. At one point, the whole of the Georgia Viaduct was covered with people from beginning to end.
Amazing. That's a huge bridge here in town.
Yeah.
It's the Deadpool Bridge. If you've seen Deadpool,
yeah.
It's that bridge. It's
that bridge. It was covered in people. Yeah, it was beautiful. I didn't get to do the march because my call time was when the march started,
I think.
Or like right when the march was going to end up being at the area, at the venue. But it was really amazing to be in a space with all the different nations.
Yeah, no
kidding. And I mean, there was some bureaucracy, as there always is, especially when the event was paid for by Canada 150 and by the government. But hand in hand, I guess.
Yeah, you.
On the one hand, that's a bummer, but on the other hand, it's also nice that they're doing it.
No one has more work to do for reconciliation than the government.
So it's nice to see they're trying.
I know, like, just listening to what they had to say, it's just like, this is like such political jargon.
Spin.
It's like, this is nice for you to show up on this day and give all this
and
money,
say these words,
just
yeah.
See what actually is going to happen if you're not just paying lip service and like making it look pretty and like doing the right thing when you're told to do the right thing and say the right thing. But
yeah, oh well.
Yeah, on the whole of the day, it was really beautiful.
That's nice.
That's more people than the Women's March.
I think so.
I think the women's march was like 50,000, wasn't it?
That's awesome.
I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. I don't have those facts in front of me. No. That's a lot of people.
We're just going to ring up the Associated Press.
There we go. Ding,
call,
ding.
Call Reuters.
Yeah.
Reuters or however you pronounce it.
Those guys. Those news guys.
No AP? What are the numbers? It's the biggest crowd ever that's ever happened.
It's the biggest crowd you've ever seen.
It's the biggest crowd that's ever happened to.
It was huge.
It was the hugest.
Huge.
Period.
Exclamation point.
As I take Abby's tea and just like.
Evan flips the table.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Wow, that's super exciting. And you got to perform, which was
The biggest crowd I've ever performed for in my life.
Oh, that's
and I've
awesome.
Been performing for like
your 10 whole life.
Years. Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, it was insane. Like Justin, my brother, performs with me, and he went out and looked at the crowd. And he's like, "This is going to be like the biggest crowd we've ever performed for." So just like have that in mind.
When so you just like, don't fuck town, it up. Yeah, yeah. This isn't a town hall at home.
Exactly. This isn't we're a long this ways away Legion. From St. Ambrose Hall. Yeah. That's for sure.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but it was really
And you
fun.
Got to do it with your brother, too. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous.
Did we even say what we're saying about?
No, not
Speaking
yet.
Of inspiration.
Yes. Segue away, my friend.
Segue this way to the topic at hand. We are talking about muses and how many, many, many designers have muses in various shapes and forms. And a few of them stick around for years.
The long haul.
A long, long time. Some of them are flash in the pan. Some of them you sort of get paired up with if you have to go to the Met Ball.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But it's been a long
It's this very strange dynamic of friendship and inspiration and professionalism and personal stuff, and like it's very amorphous, and it's hard to define what it is, but essentially it's somebody who inspires the designer in some form or another.
Creative juices flowing.
Yeah, that fire lit, you know.
I didn't realize this. I was sorry to interrupt you.
No, go right ahead.
But I doing some research on this one. I didn't realize that companies like hire. Like, basically, if you're a muse for a certain company, you're on the payroll. Like, I didn't realize that was the case. I thought it would be, like, you get all of the invites to the thing.
Sure, a little less formal, maybe, or official.
You get, you know, a clothing allowance, or you get,
I'm
like,
I'm sure that's what the way it used to be.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But
whereas nowadays, if you can make a contract happen.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to make it happen.
I guess, yeah. At the very least, at Givenchy.
You can monetize that shit.
Yeah. I didn't realize that it had become that kind of formal.
Are muses the original influencers?
Yes, in a lot of ways.
In some ways.
But only in a very directed sense. Mm-hmm. Like they're only really for the designer, and then the designer disseminates
the image
in the way that he or she sees fit. And then that gets to the public.
Yeah, as opposed to an influencer taking fashion and influencing the general public.
Yeah, right. It's like the directionality is a little bit different.
So like a famous, probably the most famous example, or one of the most famous examples that I don't think three of us are actually going to talk about is...
If it's the one I'm thinking of.
Audrey Hepburn and Hubert de Givenchy.
That's the one. But they had a long-standing relationship.
Many, many, many years. They met on the set of Sabrina, who was a costume designer.
She was young when she did that.
And they were friends until his death anyways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he died before she did. But in any case, like many, many, many years. And she, you know, made the brand, you know, brought it to the masses.
Visible.
Yeah. So that's probably the most famous example that we're actually not going to talk about. What we decided is that we're all going to talk about one sort of pairing or one relationship that
we find interesting
But that's probably the most famous example of many, 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 many.
Yeah.
But in the part of the concept too with the Met Gala, we talked about this before, but basically a designer gets paired up with a quote-unquote muse. I think it's used a little bit loosely in that context, but most designers show up with their muse that they've designed a gown for, they've designed something, or they've styled
they've worked together even on
whatever.
It. It can be done a few different ways.
Yeah, that's sort of the...
And a lot of them now are celebrities, like Tom Ford brings Julianne Moore all the time. Kim Kardashian works with Riccardo Tisci and Olivier Rousteing, who does Balmain. So they have all the... Kylie Jenner and Karl Lagerfeld are a new one, apparently.
Really?
Yes.
Is he going to do maternity clothes?
Or Kendall Jenner, the model, not Kylie.
Oh, Kendall.
Kendall. Makes more sense. So nowadays, it's celebrities and models, but that wasn't the case. And I think some of the people we're talking about today don't fall into those categories.
Yeah. It was actually kind of hard to think of someone who would get, like, at least in the way that we are sort of talking about this context, it was hard to nail it down, because so much of it is like, yeah, this person went with that person on this thing, and this person dressed this, you know, famous person for this event and this red carpet. And it's like, well, that's like, maybe not the same thing.
Like Jennifer Lawrence has a contract with Dior Couture to wear, but I don't think
they're
looking to her for inspiration.
For inspiration, because even through her contract, there's been at least two, probably three different designers at Dior.
Right.
And they're not all going to have the same relationship with Jennifer Lawrence
as
the people we're going to talk about, probably. Right. But that's a purely like monetized relationship.
Yeah.
Where she gets super kick-ass dresses when she goes to the, you know, the Oscars and the Golden Globes and stuff. And you know,
they get the photos.
And they get the photos and the credit.
Yeah, muse and spokesmodel.
Because she's not in any, is she in any of their ads or anything?
The makeup, I think.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I was going to say, she's not in any of the perfume or any of the like ready-to-wear stuff. Because it's just the couture stuff and it's just the like red carpet shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think she's done a perfume or a makeup something ad like or that. Something.
Yeah.
She's been on a magazine ad,
or
I'm sure.
She might have been did the Lady Dior handbag, something.
Yeah, maybe.
Or other.
Or like Marion Cotillard is
also, Dior. She has that. Yeah. She has a relationship too.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough with Jennifer Lawrence, considering we're not talking about her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who wants to start? Evan, you start.
Mine's sad.
Well, then you start, and then we'll
I'll start,
up it.
And then you guys
we'll
can bring it up.
Yeah, exactly. We won't end with you. How about that?
Yeah.
Start with you.
I kind of read an article last week about it, and I kind of skimmed through it. I didn't really get to the end of it, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then I came back to it and really got into it, and I was just like, oh, this is like portrays the subject in such a different light when you think about Mr. Karl Lagerfeld.
Mm.
He's had a lot of different muses through the years, like Inés de la Fressange and Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
And I think Nicole Kidman might have been teetering a bit more towards like the Jennifer Lawrence archetype.
Sure.
Yeah.
But
rather than a true muse.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Sure.
But when you go back to like the beginning of his career, you can...
So Carl's been around a long time.
Quite a while. Yeah. He's like a contemporary of YSL, if no one knew that. Like they were coming
your buds
up
back in
around
the 50s.
The same time.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to examine this relationship between Carl and his... the sources are very scattered. Some say they're his boyfriend, or some say they're his companion, or his muse, or
well, back in the day,
friend.
You couldn't really like come out and
yeah,
say...
Yeah, exactly.
We fucking...
Exactly. Carl to this day says that they'd never had a physical relationship, even though they were together for almost 20 years.
Sure. But Carl would never.
Carl's also a weirdo, so there's
I mean, yeah.
He won't admit to anything.
In the same article, Carl describes himself as a Calvinist, which I have no idea what that means.
It's his religion.
Okay.
It's like a Protestant religion.
Okay.
All right.
The muse I'm going to focus on today is Jacques de Beauchet, my horrible French. Bache, I think. B-A-S-C-H-E-A.
That's
E-R.
E-R, that's what I have as well.
You have that?
Well, no, I happened to find him because I didn't even know this guy existed. As someone who's a very big fan of the cult of personality of Karl Lagerfeld, I didn't know the Jacques de Beauchet de Beaumarchais, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I've never
even
heard
existed.
Of middle-class French aristocracy.
Yes.
Tell me everything.
This dude was born into middle-class French aristocracy. He was born in Saigon, which is now modern-day Ho Chi Minh City, and began dating Carl in 1971 when he was 20 years old. Basically, like his style can be described as like the perfect archetype of the dandy of that age. So he kind of took that persona and applied it to the 70s styles. And you can see a lot of the things that he was wearing at that time is much... the same in the way Carl dresses now, like the high starch collars, the wide ties, like the perfect tailoring, all that kind of thing that really translated into Carl's work. Carl would describe him as a devil with Garbo's face.
Oh.
And you put like this guy next to photos of Greta Garbo and they could be like...
Sure. Is that a compliment?
Yeah.
Coming from Carl, who knows?
He should be got a mustache too, and a real fan, like real...
Oh yeah, he
mustache.
Had like that perfect like little...
Like a little teeny...
Yeah.
Like a Vincent perfect. Price situation? Like
maybe
a teeny
a
tiny...
Bigger.
A bit bigger than that.
Yeah.
But that like...
It was like between a Tom Selleck and a Vincent Price.
That's all mustaches.
He just described him as this person who didn't dress like anyone else. He was always ahead of everyone stylistically, and he made him laugh more than anyone else he'd ever known. And he was...
Karl Lagerfeld can laugh?
I would guess so. Oh my God. And maybe, like, just keep listening to the story. It just gets so tragic. He described him as, like, the complete opposite of himself. Like, where Karl was, like, very... very staunch and put together and kind of withholding. He was crazy and despicable and perfect, and he like created a lot of cases of jealousy amongst the French fashion crowd.
Oh.
One in particular being a rift between Karl and Pierre Berger, who was
YSL's Yves Saint Laurent's partner. Yes.
Because Yves Saint Laurent was seduced by this dude, by Debauché, sometime in the mid-70s. They had an affair. So like that kind of like...
scandalous. Can you imagine the scandal?
The scandal.
Oh boy.
Like I'm just thinking of that in the context of the Vancouver fashion scene, and I don't think we could survive it.
I'm thinking of it in the context of...
like modern fashion in general, maybe.
And of the... like fashion in the 70s of the time is so much different. It's such a tiny community when you're at that high level, especially. And in Paris.
And he's part of the French aristocracy, and they're gay, and like fashion houses.
And there's money, and there's all these things playing together.
And there's also fame. So this like little kind of teeny kind of thing that could have been swept under the rug in other circles is not going to happen.
And like when you look at it in the context of the 70s, there's like this huge sexual liberation movement sweeping over the world.
Yeah.
And this was around the time when Saint Laurent was doing the Safari collection and lace smoking and all of his iconic collections. So he was at the top of
his game. He was doing his best work, pretty much.
And Pierre Berger saw Jacques as like a distraction, that he thought that Karl had like set this up so that Karl was trying to like sabotage the house of Saint Laurent.
Ooh, stir in the pot.
Kill drama.
Especially because the work that Yves Saint Laurent is doing is arguably on a higher caliber than the work that Karl Lagerfeld is doing. At least in the gift of hindsight. Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a great quote from this French photographer named Philippe Petreau. He said that the Paris fashion scene, who once joyously hugged, fucked, and danced together, was being forced into two camps that hated one another because of that rift. So before that time, everyone was friends, everyone partied
hanging
together,
out, yeah, living it up,
and everything. And then after that, it was like two different camps and like completely separated. The French fashion scene.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's like all of this amazing intrigue.
Oh, wow.
Ugh, so beautiful. But like, of course.
Oh, imagine the arguments they would have gotten into in French. These gay men with their strong opinions and all artistic just shouting at each other.
Yeah. Everyone's beautiful.
Everyone's
doing drugs.
Yeah. Tossing martinis out.
Putting cigarettes out eating each other.
Yeah. Throwing ashtrays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crying, sobbing. So great.
There's some great
talking shit about each other.
some horrible French insult that doesn't make any sense in any English. Other language.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like a sick burn.
It's a burn.
Le sick burn.
The last couple of biopics of... I think we got our tag.
I think we got our feature image right there. Le sick burn.
The last couple of biopics for the YSL biopic, and then there was the Eves, or I can't remember what it was called. One of them was called YSL, and the other one was called Eves.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years, they both portrayed this Jacques Debauché character as like this hedonistic, antagonistic person who was always around to just like fuck everyone's shit up and
stir the pot, just to be
a shit kicker, pretty much. And there's a biography that came out last year where that the author tried to like dispel that rumor and try and portray him in more of a human way, because obviously for film and everything, and you can read that, like a person who's writing a script can find this character in biography and in articles and everything and paint him in a certain way just to lend to their story. But at the end of the day, like, he was like a product of his time, where he came
and
from
his context.
Exactly.
And yeah, exactly.
He came from middle class, but he always wanted more. And once he grew up and realized that he could use his beauty and his charm to
climb that ladder.
To climb the ladder, he would do anything he wanted and anything he could to get there. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's so interesting that, like, your muse doesn't necessarily have to be the person that you're designing for. Like, it doesn't have to be your...
A model.
Like,
or someone of the opposite sex.
That's often the case, but...
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think that it was more like these parts of Carl's persona that might have, that he might not have been that inclined to explore. He could kind of live vicariously through this character.
And access obviously that kind of,
that kind of world. Like Carl has said, like he knew what this guy was getting up to. Like he was known for like being a connoisseur of S&M and orgies and all of like that
kind of
scene. And he would like travel, he would like board a plane to go to a sex club in New York for one night and fly back to Paris the next day.
Ooh la la.
Like that was just this guy's life.
Wow.
So I just think that like Katie was saying, like your muse doesn't always need to be the person that you're creating clothes for. It can be like this fantasy person that inspires you in a different way.
And that you like for them, but also you like for what
they make you
feel about yourself or think about yourself.
And maybe they open you up to different, you know, aspects of art or culture or philosophy or poetry or whatever that
philosophy that
you
wouldn't
perspective.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
But of course, this was the 70s leading into the 80s. And tragically...
Oh, is this going to end in a bad disease?
Yeah.
No.
Jacques contracted HIV sometime in the late 70s and succumbed to complications of AIDS in 1989. And the whole time that he was declining in health, like Carl stayed with him and like basically like lived in the hospital with him in his last days.
Wow.
And was there when he died. And Carl being someone who's not very emotional or vulnerable, someone who detested funerals and still does, he like planned his memorial and his funeral and like went to it. And that's the only funeral he's been to apparently.
He has a heart.
And I think like
been there underneath like, all those starched collars and a million rings and fingerless gloves.
And now, like, you look at Carl the way he is today and, like, all of these obsessions he's had himself, yeah. But it's, like, he wears, like, that starched collar and the wide tie and all of these things that are so removed from, like, a modern aesthetic.
Yeah.
Maybe as, like, a token of remembrance, an homage to his original muse.
And a little insight into the mind of a Lagerfeld.
Yeah. It's insane.
That's pretty crazy.
And then, like,
I wonder what his book would be. I bet he'd have the best book in the whole world.
Oh, like, Carl.
Autobiography.
Oh, hopefully it's coming.
Carl or
this guy.
Or Jacques.
Yeah.
So, like, following his death, Carl created a perfume called Jacko in his honor, which was his nickname, I suppose. Sure. That's, like, really the only thing that you can find that's, like, a direct
official,
inspiration into, like, Carl's brand.
Interesting.
But you can like when you look at photos of him, which I'm sure we'll share and have up on the blog, but you can see like the way he dressed is a lot of, you can find those codes in like Chanel and Fendi now.
Oh yeah, I bet, eh?
Yeah.
So it's like this person, even though they weren't together for very long, like made a lasting impression on his sensibilities.
Oh wow.
Cool, I had no idea.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I had no idea either.
That's a long time ago, too, that he passed away, 89.
Yeah. Yeah, 30 years almost, right? Wow. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Good.
I figured he would have some, like, I don't know, some famous, you know, flimsy little actress some Brigitte Bardot or whatever would be the, you know, his long...
The person, yeah.
His long-time muse.
Oh, that one model that he had forever and ever. Forget him. He was Italian or something, wasn't he?
Oh, Baptiste?
Yes.
There's a really great photo of them walking around in Baptiste's in, like, these really, really short, like cheeky short shorts. Like, denim cut-off shorts.
Ooh,
like,
la.
Playing and stuff. And he's wearing, like, a little, like... football jersey, like football in the European sense. It's really funny. And he's wearing like those awful like early 2000s Dior sunglasses, the ones that you like wrap around.
Oh,
and look
God,
like
yeah.
They're like ski goggles.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. And they have like jewels and diamonds on them, and they're like a gradient, a shiny gradient.
Oh, yes, because it was 2001. Yeah. Oh, shit.
There's like a little heart. Around.
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah,
a little star.
A little
or
diamond.
The little yeah. Chanel logo in the top corner.
Yeah, yeah. A little Swarovski Oof. Shit. Yeah, oh boy.
It's bad news.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I guess he never bounced back from Jacques.
No.
Nobody compares.
How could you?
No.
To the love of your life.
Yeah, oh well. Well, I'm going to bounce off you because I'm going to talk about YSL.
Love.
Yeah.
Who was one of my all-time favorite designers. He had a lot of muses, a lot of even quote official muses. The list was very long. Very notably, Catherine Deneuve, the French actress. Mm-hmm. She wore a lot of his stuff, and they were seen together a lot of the time. And
the big bow dress.
Yeah, the big bow dress. She wore Le Smoking all the time too, and it was, you know, in the '60s and early '70s. They kind of hung out a lot. There was a lot of models. Iman was a big muse of his, and another lady called Katushka, who was also a statuesque African woman, very like feline, beautiful, angular face, a goddess essentially, just like Iman, perfection. And then even other couple ladies, what were their names? Letitia Casta at the end of his career, who Dave wrote, I'm going to bust you on this one, that she was Dave's a boner's muse.
Oh!
Back in the day, circa whatever, 1998 or whenever it was she was making the rounds. Lovely, lovely French lady, Letitia Casta.
The only reason I know that name is because my friend Rylan had a poster of her, and I was like, who's that? He's like, you don't know who Letitia Casta is? And I was like,
apparently not.
No. I don't read Maxim, so I don't, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know who that is. He had these two ladies who inspired him, and they both, I'm going to talk about two ladies, and they both inspired YSL for a very long time, for decades, but in two very different ways. The first one is a lady, named Lulu de la Falaise.
Yes, I her name
came up.
Which
is kind of a famous person, which is kind of a famous name. They met, I believe, in the 70s. And where's my notes for Lulu? Here we go. Louise Vava Lucia Henriette de Bailly de la Falaise. It's her full name. Her father was a count.
I was going to say, that's the name
that
of
is aristocracy.
Yes. And her mother was a model. And she started up as a model. And she designed, she ended up moving to New York City and working for Halston and a whole bunch.
She worked for YSL, didn't she?
And then she ended up working for him.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And she was what they call the quintessential Rive Gauche, which is a neighborhood in Paris, Rive Gauche Bohemian, which is like fancy for hippie.
So we have her to thank for boho?
Yes.
Cool.
We have Lulu de la Falaise, who passed away in 2011, I forget anyway, very recently. In the last 10 years, she passed away. So she had this personal relationship with him for a while, but then she started working for him, and she ran the accessories and jewelry for him for the longest time. And her personal style, the way she put outfits together and accessorized and did it, that was her inspiration to YSL, because she was very out there. She had these crazy outfits. She would pile on a whole bunch of different stuff, very mismatched, very weird combinations of things. And her just aura and being was just this amazing inspiration that then YSL would then take and focus into a look or an aspect or a feeling or a demographic that he would then want to emulate or sell to, essentially. A rare taste, Catherine Horan called her. She had rare taste, which means fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like super weird.
That's like such a nice...
It's a nice way of saying
fashion-y
like...
way of saying there. Like... Out there, like, if you like it, then you're on board. And if you don't like it, then we also agree.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really good way of making everybody happy with
yes,
your statement.
Definitely. Yes, yeah.
But every side of that can go, yes, agreed.
Yeah, it had rare taste.
Yeah, thumbs up or thumbs down. It doesn't matter. It still applies. So she ended up working for myself for years and years and years and running this. And then she had a jewelry line on the Home Shopping Network. Later on in her life, like she sold lower
costume jewelry.
Yeah, costume jewelry of her designs and stuff. She also had a higher end jewelry design jewelry line too for a while. But anyway, so she had this, so she ended up working for him for years and years and years and just being like a fixture in Parisian society and the fashion industry and stuff. And
what is her full name again?
Louise Vava Lucia Henriette Labaye de la Falaise.
I can see that. You know how there's that trend of shirts for some reason where it'll just have like a list of like the ingredients on a pizza or
streets in a neighborhood names
or something. That's going to be a good shirt. Just her name, just in all the lines.
Vava being the best one. V-A-V-A. It was like a nickname of her grandmother or something, according to Wikipedia.
Love that.
Vava. See, I can't believe I already had all my kids and like, let that one slip by.
Shit.
Anyway.
Get Poppy's birth certificate in
Poppy,
here.
You're Vava now. Vava Shumka.
I like that. Vava.
Get it.
Vava. Vava. Get over here.
Get a Have gerbil or a fish or something.
There we go. Sounds good. But the other lady I'm going to talk about is one of his more famous ones that he had until like she was there. She was one of like three people who was there when YSL died. Betty Catrou, who started out when she was very young, when she was 16 or 17. She modeled for Chanel for a few years. She was the daughter of a Brazilian socialite and a French diplomat.
Again, royalty.
And like one of those kids who like never saw her parents.
Oh, yeah. And raised by nannies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, did not know who really her parents were and lived a very, very beautiful, sheltered, decadent lifestyle. And somebody she knew, like, knew Coco Chanel and said, hey, you're looking for a girl. Check out Betty. So she modeled for Chanel. And like, she knew like Jean Cocteau and met him and met Francis Bacon and like just always all these circles with artists and famous people of like an exceptionally high level. And she got to like meet and know all these people just by being born where she was born.
Like the most interesting man in the world kind of style of circle.
Yes. Through no fault of her own.
Yeah. She's having coffee with Picasso one afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know.
And that's just her pal.
And when she,
James Dean walks in and their buds all of a sudden.
Yeah.
She said I was listening to some interviews with this Betty lady and she said she doesn't necessarily have any talents. Her talent is that she attracts talent.
So she that's basically the definition of a muse.
Exactly. She just has, there's something, this je ne sais quoi, this aura about her that makes people be drawn to her. And one of those people was YSL. They met in the 60s, I believe, at a super gay nightclub in Paris.
Called Seven?
Régine.
Oh.
Was one of the big ones. And she is this statuesque woman. It's like, super tall, white blonde hair, very boyish frame, like a model essentially, just naturally.
The perfect couture body.
Yes. And YSL saw her, went over and introduced him, or got somebody to introduce them or something. They met anyway and bought her a drink and they started talking. And he asked her to model and she said no. And this was the 60s in Paris and YSL was the shit and nobody told him no ever. And she was like, I'm not going to model. I'm okay.
Which I'm sure just made her
more. Yes, exactly. Which fascinated him. And in kind of the opposite way that Karl Lagerfeld and Jacques had this, like this very oppositional relationship, Eve thought Betty was his twin sister.
And I was going to say.
And they were exactly the same on so many levels.
When you were describing her, I was like,
sounds like him.
Tall,
like
waifish, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of disconnected from the world a little bit. I mean, they both they became friends, and all the shit went down in 1968, like all the like you know rebellions and revolutions and stuff. And they were like just in Marrakesh, like hanging out, and missed it all because they were just like being fucking rich as shit in Marrakesh in YSL's house. And they came back, and they're like, oh, okay, it's different now.
Oh, the world's a different place, literally.
Okay. I guess we'll just figure it out.
Great.
The times where you could literally unplug.
Just escape and just be
go
unaware.
To Marrakesh. Oh, my dream.
And she's this very strange dichotomy of someone who grew up very rich, then very, excuse me, that cider's making me.
Yeah, me too.
Giving me some burps. Sorry, Katie and Evan, bringing this drink to us.
Evan found me the ciders.
Yes. Good times. So she never had a job, really. She never does anything.
Right, of course.
She married rich.
Yeah.
And, but she's also like anti-bourgeois.
Ooh.
But also like bourgeois fuck.
But also lives off of the bourgeoisie.
Yeah, it's and like a super rich husband and like lives in like a fucking castle or some shit.
Yeah, it's just
like a giant Parisian apartment and like has never worked a day in her life.
Yeah.
And just drinks and literally like drinks and dances. That's what she does. She like takes dance classes.
Oh. She's still alive?
Yes. She's fierce as fuck. I watched a couple videos. There was one from Porter Magazine and one from Show Studios. They're all available online. And she's...
Is she like...
She is that like effortless French woman who like doesn't know about things like on purpose.
Right.
So she doesn't get... Because the lady is like, people emulate you all the time. She's always had this very boyish style and a very boyish figure. And... It was kind of a weird relationship between her and Yves Saint Laurent because he would design for her, whereas he designed from Lulu, you know?
Yeah.
Like he saw Lulu and designed, and then he designed and then gave it to Betty, and then Betty would wear it.
Right.
And like, she always wore blazers and button-down shirts and trousers and stuff. So she and many people... have emulated her or found her to be very iconic style-wise, and she's, like, oblivious. And, like, oh, no, one doesn't care.
Except for the fact that all of the staff of French Vogue dress exactly like her.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But she, quote, doesn't think about those things.
But I don't
bother myself with this thing.
That's wonderful.
And, of course, she has, like, the perfect French accent and, like, big giant sunglasses and still has, like, long white blonde hair and probably more white now because she's probably in her 70s now, if not more. But anyway, she's, like, this fascinating... nonchalant, charming woman who, like, you would fucking hate if you saw her on paper, but you're all, like, in love with her and just want to be around her.
I like the thing about, like, with Carl's Jacques and with both of these women, and actually with the people that I'm going to talk about, it's not a sexual relationship.
No,
but
not
it's
at all.
So, it's
or romantic,
really intimate.
Even, like, you know?
Yeah, but it's intimate.
Yes. It's like, literally her, Betty, and Eve literally talked every single day for, like, 40 years.
Yeah.
And saw each other. If they didn't see each other every day, they would talk every day. She was one of the, three people when he passed away in the hospital.
Oh, that's crazy. Ugh.
And was, like, still, like, friends with Pierre Berger still years later and stuff.
He just passed this past week, didn't he?
Yeah.
Pierre Berger.
Yeah, I did.
Rest in peace.
She said that she had managed to find a husband who kept her. She made her a kept woman. And Eve had Pierre... And Pierre and her husband were kind of like their parents, and they were like the naughty kids.
That's fun.
And she's like, I don't know how I managed to keep both relationships going. This like naughty sibling relationship with Eve, where they just like travel and just get into trouble and just like fuck everything.
Yeah.
And then, but still managed to have a husband, and then Eve still had Pierre, and they managed to make it work, and they'd hang out all the time, and they'd travel together. And
oh, what a dream that sounds like.
Oh boy,
it's so fun.
So that's another way, like a long lost sibling.
Yeah,
Eve and Betty Ware.
And
there's
yeah,
some
that's cool.
amazing pictures of them together in like the safari outfits and stuff, and like she's got like
there's some amazing black ones where they're wearing caftans.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Headscarves and khaki,
and shaded or like gradient sunglasses.
Oh, absolutely,
gradient aviators.
A lot of those, yeah.
Big time,
absolutely. All right. Well, that's my ladies.
That's good. Well, I sort of did two because I started doing the first one and it got really sad. So I was like, oh, I can't end it on this note. So I started looking at Alexander McQueen and he has a few muses. So what time are we at here?
48 minutes.
Oh, we got a bit of time. Okay.
We got some time.
So initially I was looking at Daphne Guinness because she was quite influential to him, but I think more now having looked at it that it sort of went the other way a little bit more, that she got more out of him than
he
got out of her relationship.
Mm, yeah.
She
wore
supporter.
A lot of his clothes and was one of the few people who could afford his clothing.
Yeah, and I think that was more of a which isn't to say that she wasn't a muse because she was, but you kind of can't talk about her without talking about Isabella Blow first.
Yes.
She was like first number one. Basically discovered Alexander McQueen. She purchased.
And part of the reason why McQueen ended up passing away because she passed away and he.
Oh, that's what I'm going to get to.
Right. Oh, sorry. I'm jumping the gun here.
No, I know.
With the grief.
With the sad times. these relationships that are so close and so tight and with these artistic people who are, you know, wildly talented at what they do, are there's always some sadness.
Yeah.
I mean, there always is someone.
People who function on this level.
Yeah.
And have these personality types.
You know? Yeah. Especially these two. Anyway, so Isabel Blow was actually, she basically discovered him at his graduation show at Central St. Martin's and bought the entire graduate collection. She bought the whole thing. And she was an editor at Tatler magazine, and she was a muse for Philip Tracy as well. A hat designer. And she was enormously influential in that kind of way, where they talked every day. She had all kinds of contacts in the industry and introduced him to all the right people and, you know, advocated for him and promoted him in lots of different ways, told them to, because his name is Lee, mm-hmm. Alexander McQueen. And she's like, Lee and just go by Alexander, which is probably a smart move and definitely worked.
Yeah.
And this is where I heard about muses being on salary, because when he got hired by Givenchy, she expected to be named a muse and be put on payroll, and he didn't. So it caused a rift big time.
Yeah.
And
that'll do it.
But she basically got him out there and got him meeting the people that needed to know him.
Yeah.
Got him the job at Givenchy and sort of she moved him into her flat in London when he needed a place to live.
Wow.
And he kind of left her behind a little bit. Like his relationship was with anyone basically was complicated. Difficult. At the best of times.
Sure, yeah.
Not an easy guy to be with. Very, very out there, very anti-establishment, very extremely intense. Artistic, very intense, an incredibly talented artist and designer, but not necessarily easy to deal with in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And so she kind of got left behind a little bit, and her relationship with him as it sort of struggled contributed to her own depression issues, and she killed herself in 2007, I believe.
Mm.
I forget if it's 2007 and it was 3 years before, if it was 2004 and it was, anyway, I forget what the math was. But in any case, she committed suicide. She drank poison. She drank a weed killer poison.
Oh.
But she was a really influential, like everybody knew her in London. She was a pot stirrer big time. She knew everybody.
Yeah.
So she introduced Daphne Guinness to him. Uh-huh, and was there.
That connection.
Yeah. I believe. And Daphne Guinness, if the name Guinness doesn't mean anything to you, then go back under the rock because you're out to lunch. She's the heir to the Guinness fortune. She's literally aristocracy. She has, you know, all the wealth you can imagine, and is a huge supporter of couture and mm-hmm. buys tons of couture.
Yeah.
And she and Isabella and Alexander McQueen were all pals. Like Isabella and her were really good friends. And so after her death, she started the Isabella Blow Foundation that contributes money and resources and stuff to mental health and to depression.
Oh, wow.
And they also do a scholarship program for Central St. Martin's every year as well.
Wow, that's awesome.
So that's awesome because, I mean,
all things considered,
so all the other,
where I it mean, came from, yeah.
Then also, there's another girl that keeps coming up, which at the time I think was probably cool, but in hindsight is like kind of icky. This girl, Annabelle Nielsen, she's basically a model and a socialite. She met him when she was really young. She's 22. And she's, you know, some other heir to some aristocracy.
Yeah.
Her dad's a duke and her mom's a lady or whatever. Like, I don't know how many titles her family carries.
Sure,
but
a bunch.
A bunch, but she's legit aristocracy. So, you know, never had to work. You know, all those kinds. Yeah. Married some rich banker, some famously rich banker. And they were also good friends. And quote unquote muse, I'm not sure how much that applies in this sense, but they were really good friends. He got married. I mean, the marriage wasn't recognized, but they got married on a boat in Ibiza.
Well,
Barry, I think.
La-di-da.
He and his partner Barry got married. And So she organized the whole event, and she and Kate Moss were the bridesmaids, and they just threw this thing together, and Naomi Campbell was there. And so, like, this is the caliber of...
this is how we're... Yeah. This is how
of
we're
people, rolling, and also the caliber of party. Like, I think a lot of the time this was, like, party hangers-on kind of people. She's now a quote-unquote... She's not an actor. What's the word? She's on a fucking Ladies of London... reality.
Oh,
she's a reality
I
TV show.
I know this lady. Yes.
Yeah. And she's
Ladies
of Ladies of London. Yes. If you're not watching Ladies of London, my friend.
And she talks about
it. You need to get on that fucking
You know, being friends with Alexander McQueen all the time. I don't know this woman at all, but it just like put a gross taste in my mouth of like, I don't think you were amused. I think you like saying that you were amused and you did a shitload of blow with him. And maybe you guys
really
to his demise. Weren't that great.
Yeah.
Because then in 2010, as we all know, Alexander McQueen killed himself the day before his mom's wedding, right before his mom's funeral, his mom passed away. His dogs got dog got diagnosed with cancer the same week, and that was enough. Like, he took all the things he could find, and he, you know, took his own life, and it shocked everybody. Everybody was quite blown away by this. But
I remember hearing about it.
It was
crazy.
So he had a few quote unquote muses, but I think Isabella Blow is probably the closest thing to the realist.
True, yeah, like how the context we're talking about here.
And he kind of threw her away a little bit, which was really, really hard for her.
Yeah.
And I think probably in hindsight, really hard for him.
I was going to say, subconsciously, maybe hard for him, but maybe not outwardly because he had that. He had a strong anti-everything kind of personality.
But she was
also...
like
a fuck you to everybody all the time, pretty much.
So. Yeah, but she was not the hangers-on. Like, she knew...
No.
She recognized his talent right away.
Yeah.
And was interested
Tried to
in
nurture
that.
It. Yeah.
More than the parties that she could get into with him kind of thing. So the word muse... This is what I kind of struggled with doing this.
Yeah.
Was like the word muse gets tossed around really easily. But like the ones that we've talked about anyway...
Are
real.
Level.
It's like a real relationship and a real partnership in a lot of ways. And she had that, but it didn't last very long.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just going to throw this out there. Mental illness and depression is a real thing.
Yeah.
And it happens to a lot of people. So
In a bunch of ways. Yeah.
New moms deal with it, never gets talked about.
Yeah.
Guys deal with it in ways that don't get talked about. So if you just get help, talk to someone. There's tons and tons of resources. Just
it can be a stranger. You don't have to tell anybody you know about
there's
it.
There's no shame.
You can tell it's people you know. You can tell people you don't know.
Yeah. Just
reach
just,
out.
I'm just going to put that out there because it feels like the right thing to say at this time because this was a really, I was like, I don't want to talk too much about this because it's so sad.
Yeah.
And he was so talented and it ended so tragically. So I'm going to shift gears and I'm going to talk about what I originally wanted to talk about, but I was like too predictable and I'll go real quick. But it's Jean-Paul Gaultier and Madonna.
Yes.
I mean.
There you go.
Yeah. Is there a more iconic, first one you think of?
Iconic.
Oh, shit. Abby's talking about the cone bra.
Y'all.
From the Blonde Ambition Tour in 1992.
Yes. Y'all remember that?
Y'all remember that?
If you don't remember that, again, crawl back under your rock.
Yeah, get back underneath. I guess she called him. And they had like sort of talked around in circles a little bit, but she called him.
Because when was this? Like 92?
92, I think.
Maybe? Yeah.
And they sort of knew about each other and they had talked or they had met or something.
Maybe, yeah.
And talked about stuff and he had done some sketches or something. And then, so she called him and he was getting ready for a show at his team is like, Madonna's on the phone. She wants to do it. And he's like, ha ha ha, like, whatever. Take him as like, kind of didn't think it was real. And then later, like at the end of the day or after the show, he's like, so was that for real? Like, did she really call? And they're like, yes, she really called. So that was when they got together and did the Blonde Ambition.
Figured it out. One of the most iconic.
Wear costumes of all time.
And one of the most
music like, and fashion.
Yeah. You cannot separate Madonna from the cone bra, and you cannot separate Gaultier from the cone bra, and you can't separate any of them from that
from each other.
Yeah. It's so 90s. It's so punk rock. It's so
French.
It's so like badass in your face, Madonna. Like it's you can't.
It's cheeky. It's charming. It's everything he is, and it's everything she. Is,
yeah.
At the same time.
And certainly was at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, he really liked her, like, her sort of underground style. She didn't have a stylist. She did all of it on her own and had her own kind of look that didn't look like anything else that people were doing at the time, which is certainly
very
true.
Very much so, yeah.
And so he designed for the Blonde Ambition Tour, for the Drown Tour, for the Reinvention Tour, for the Confession Tour, and for the MDNA Tour.
Aha!
So they have a, so
this
long,
is a long time
long
coming.
Time relationship. And they, she walked for him in a couple of shows in the 90s as well. One in 1995, quite famously, she had a little baby carriage and a little dog.
Yeah, I remember.
Peak Madonna, like, yes. Peak Madonna. It was right after... it was right after the tour, the Blonde Ambition Tour, and I think it was after Truth or Dare came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's in Truth or Dare as well. And if you haven't seen Truth or Dare, oh my God, it's
check
so
it out. Good. It is 100% worth your time.
So good.
Her obsessing about Antonio Banderas is reason enough to watch that movie.
And Kevin Costner thinking the show is really neat, and she's so pissed. So great. Really neat? She's so mad. She's such a bitch. I love it.
Oh, it's great.
So good.
She can be. It's amazing.
Don't go for second best, baby. Put your love to the test. So good. I've been listening to that song a lot lately. So
beautiful.
Good.
It's a good one.
Anyway, I could go on and on, but we probably shouldn't. And I didn't do enough research because I did all of my research on Alexander McQueen. It was too sad.
Yeah.
So sad.
Oh, boy.
And God, he was a talented fucking guy. Yeah. But Jean-Paul Gaultier is my forever. He's my forever favorite.
Rightly so.
Yeah, he's the best.
Rightly so. Well, let's wrap this part up.
Okay.
And we will come right back after And we're back. Katie. She was going to talk shit about somebody, and I totally cut her off.
It's true.
Our breaks are for re-drinking, peeing, and talking shit.
And gossip, yeah.
Exactly. That's how
wouldn't you like to know what we were saying?
But this person you don't know.
Oh, it was
never
real juicy.
Will. Totally inconsequential.
I just remember the other thing I was going to talk about off the start. I totally forgot. We went camping last weekend. Yeah. It was super fun.
Awesome. Got to get those last few weekends or whatever trips in when you can, right?
Yep. I think those days are over for the year. But.
Mind you, it's supposed to be like 28 again this week. So what the fuck?
Oh, shit.
Well,
maybe not. Again.
Don't put your tent away.
I don't have to. I can drive my tent around.
Man.
Do you have to wash those sheets and that? Like all the towels and stuff.
Oh, sure. Oh, well. Fun times.
Anyway, it's nothing to do with anything. Let's move on.
No obsessions. Well, I got myself a fucking sweet belt.
Oh, go on.
I got two obsessions in my first one. Since having my second baby, I am a different measurement around the middle. A larger one. Just to be clear. And also,
smaller since having the baby, though.
Well,
let's
true.
Give me some credit.
Okay, yes, it's true. I don't have a, 50-inch waist anymore. 65-inch waist. I don't even know what it was. I never even measured. But anyway, and plus over the summer, too, like I just wear shorts or like elastic waist pants. That's all I wear in the summer is elastic waist pants of like nice summer fabrics. And so I got my jeans out, and then which means I need to get my belt out. And I'm like, oh, fuck, this belt's not cutting it. And
like, what happened? How did my belt shrink over winter?
Oh, it's weird. Somebody cut my belt. What happened?
Why aren't there more holes on this belt?
So I went and I started looking online at belts, and it's so hard because I wanted a nice leather one, and it's so hard to buy leather online sometimes, right? Because you can't look at it, you can't feel it. So I looked at a couple different places and I was like, oh, $70, $90, 100 and something bucks for fucking piece of leather with a buckle, and I don't want a fancy one. I don't want a designer one. I want a fucking belt with a silver buckle, preferably.
Mm-hmm.
That's so basic. I don't care if it's woman or man. Like, that's how basic I want it. So I was like, where the fuck am I gonna look? Like, leather. Roots.
I was gonna say my favorite leather belt is from
$38.
Roots. Yep.
Beautiful leather belt. I went out the day before yesterday. Went in, the guy said hi. I said, I need a belt. Like, not looking at any of this other stuff, although it's lovely. I could spend more money in here, but I'm not going to today. I just need a belt and he directed me over. And literally, like, the first one off, I was like, boom, done. $40. I'm out of here.
And they're all and really nice so leather. Great. They're made in Toronto.
They had it in two different leathers. Usually. They had, like, a very classic flat leather and then, like, more of a pebbly leather. I'm going to have to go back and get a brown one in the pebbly or something anyway. But $38.
I know. My classic
beautiful. Brown it will belt. Last forever.
Yep. From Roots. They're there. But they're the best. Actually, J. Crew also has pretty good belts, but they don't last as long as the Roots one.
Good to know. Yep. But yeah.
But so I usually look in the men's section, too.
Trying to find something else, trying to get all fancy and, like, artisanal and shit. I'm like, fucking Roots. We're not Canadian. Roots is the shit. Roots they is, make great stuff. Especially yeah,
don't
leather
get, weights. Don't get the shit that's like, that's been
like the tourist licensed. Trap garbage.
Yeah, don't get the shit that's been licensed off and just like a backpack that you can get at Sears that says Roots on it. Don't get that because that stuff is shit. That's garbage. Not the same.
Yeah.
Go to like the Roots store. Go to Roots online.
Their handbags. Their shoes. Bags.
My all their one of my stuff favorite. Yeah, their leather stuff is gorgeous. My favorite brown leather tote bag
that you use all the time.
When I finished fashion school.
Yeah.
Is still one of my daily drivers.
It's a beautiful bag. And it's one of those things that gets better the more you use it. And I'm like the leather's still quite thick and a bit stiff.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for it to not be like that anymore because I'm gonna wear the shit out of it. I will literally wear it every day.
they have really good leather.
So I was very pleased. I was
my
happy
wallet
I
that
remembered.
I have is Roots.
I've oh, yeah, your, like little, your little zipper guy.
7 years.
It's a good time.
Yeah, it's real nice.
Yeah. So there's that. Nice. And then also Moana.
Oh, I love Moana. It's so good.
It's so cute.
We were talking about it at work the other day.
As my daughter says, I want to watch Moana. Moana.
Chris and I watched it the other day, like just by ourselves.
It's great. And I just put it on. Movie?
Yeah, we do.
Because of all the other shit that's on Netflix. It's on Netflix too. So I just like, whatever. And my daughter doesn't really like new things that much. She likes what she likes. And she just watches Peppa Pig until we're bleeding out our eyes. And we're dead. We just watch it until we're dead. And then we're dead. And then Peppa Pig's still on. So I'm like, oh, maybe she like Moana. And I think I just put it on and then didn't. And then she like noticed it was on after a while. So that kind of like warmed her up more to it. And I just put it on. It's like, hey, it's fine. It's Disney. It's great. Whatever. It's fine. It's innocuous.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. It looks, it's pretty. Oh, that's a nice song. Oh, this part's great. And then all of a sudden, like, we literally watch it every single day. It is the best. So I have the good. Music, the soundtrack. We listen to the music at dinner. And, like, it's great. The boat song where they're talking about, like, how they used to be voyagers and... Oh, man. It's so good.
It's so
She's
good.
So great. Maui's so great. I mean.
It's lady friendly. It's all like lady power.
Yes. So she's good. Not a princess.
No.
But she's a princess because she's her the daughter grandma? Of the chief and she has an animal sidekick. So she's a princess.
Yeah.
That rooster. The grandma is so great. I love the grandma. She's like.
I'm a crazy lady.
She's like kind of kooky and crazy, yeah. But like. She's just wise
sends her
and
on her path. On her path. So yeah. Bad. So anyway, I'm sure I'm last to this boat. I'm definitely last among the parents to get on the Moana train, but it's so good.
Have you seen it ever?
Frozen.
Yeah, I loved it.
Aunt Sheila and I were talking about the other day. Frozen can suck a whole bowl of dicks.
Frozen ain't shit.
Really?
Frozen ain't shit for Moana. I'm
I haven't
sorry.
Seen Frozen.
Yeah, you're fine. Just watch Moana again.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Spare yourself.
All right.
It's all right.
I do get Let It Go in my head on a fairly regular basis.
How Far I'll Go is way better. Way better.
Yeah.
I am a wonder. Oh, it's great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So that's my obsession. That. Yeah.
Nice.
And I've probably seen it through in various like chunks. I don't know, 50 times. That's great.
Okay, well, mine, it's in a similar kind of vein. This one has not come out yet, but I just saw the trailer. I've watched it like 5 or 6 times since it came out, since I became aware of it yesterday, the trailer for Isle of Dogs.
I was going to say, is this a Wes Anderson movie?
I'm so excited. It's a Wes Anderson stop motion animation in like Fantastic Mr. Fox style. But it's an original
dogs.
Story and it's all dogs and it's Japanese. Like it's set in Japan. Yeah, I forget what the name of the island is. Oh, I guess it's garbage. It's like Garbage Island that they where they leave all their garbage and they bring all the dogs.
They banish all the dogs too.
And then this pilot boy comes to find his dog, and all the dogs are like Edward Norton and Bryan Cranston and Jeff Goldblum and Bill Murray and Liev Schreiber and Tilda Swinton, like all of these, I mean, the usual characters, the usual cast, I should say. But it looks so good. Ah, a Wes Anderson dog movie. Is there anything better?
Sounds great. I'm on board.
I can't wait. I'm going to love it already. I know I am. Yes. I don't know when it comes out, but
it better not suck.
I think there's only one trailer.
I've only seen one. I've only seen it maybe last like 3 days.
Yeah, I think it just came
Dave
out.
Directed me to it.
Oh, I love dogs.
And Wes Anderson.
So cute. Also, smaller one. I've been on the true crime front podcast wise. Yes. I've been burning through Case File. If you're into true crime, Case File is good. You can be selective if you want. There's lots to listen to.
Awesome.
I'll have to tell my sister-in-law about it. If you're not into true crime, then do not.
Another don't even go there.
But it's good. There's some really good ones in there. But also, I love dogs. They're so cute. They all look so cute. Oh, I can't wait.
Beautiful.
Yvonne?
I have one.
If it's Shania again.
Although... Did I tell you all that I'm going to see Shania?
Oh, Shania.
You told us. I don't know if you
I don't think I've told the podcast the listeners. Yeah.
Of course.
Hags.
Yes, Shania. I am. Was it in March or something?
May.
Not May even 5th March.
Or 6th. We still haven't chosen what day we're going to go yet.
But get on it. Those tickets are going to sell out.
Ugh. I'm finally going to see Shania live in person.
Beautiful. You've seen Gaga. Yeah. You've seen Shania. Oh,
did I talk about Gaga? How I went and saw Gaga? Well, I went and saw Gaga a couple months ago.
It was fantastic.
She was fantastic. My session is not the Gaga documentary on Netflix, which I would recommend.
Still need to watch it, yes.
Oh, you have seen it.
Yes, I had a premiere party at my house.
Oh, my God. I've seen it. Dave says she smokes a lot.
Yeah, she smokes a lot of weed. Yeah.
Oh, well.
But
the chronic pain, man.
Yeah, she has fibromyalgia, which is like a nerve disorder.
Ooh, that's no joke.
Yeah. Moving on from that, though, I have like one stupid one and one great one. Great ones, technically. The first one is this soda I've discovered. It's an Australian brand called Bundaberg.
With the tear-off.
Yeah.
The tear-off caps.
What is this? So,
literally tear the cap
and it
off.
Pops. It's so satisfying. Yeah. So fun, and the flavor is so good, and it's all cane sugar and like natural juices and like vegetable juice, and like the least healthy thing in there is like the preservatives, which is like at the bottom of the label, not like the second one for regular Coke and like regular
do they
sodas.
Do a cola? I thought it was
they
just
do
root
yeah
beer.
They do root beer, they do like ginger ale, cola, like all of like
what
the
a
real
lovely little package, like these little stubbies.
My favorite yeah, little one stubby the bottles. Little stubby bottles. My favorite's the lemon lime bitters.
Oh,
so good.
With a little bit of gin, I bet that's fucking deadly.
I'm just thinking of vodka and that ginger beer.
So good. But I just finished reading two books, which I haven't done a lot of reading in the last couple of years, having been insanely busy. And,
sure.
You know, reading doesn't really fit into my life anymore the same way it did when we were in school.
I'm just getting back into it.
Yeah.
You will find your way.
But,
I'm reading enough books with both of us these days. I'm reading so many books these days.
I'm reading a lot of poetry lately, but that's not my obsession is. I just finished reading together. I was listening to I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou on audio on Audible, which is amazing because she reads it in her cadence and like
beautiful.
Tells her story, and it's amazing. It's like listening to
Maya Angelou.
It's just like listening to like one of her lectures, but it's like all of the lessons are from her books, which is so amazing. And then I was reading Half Breed by Maria Campbell, which is often like lauded as the native woman's caged bird.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
It's like they both like both books were written like within a decade of each other. They were born within a decade of each other. They were kind of alive during the same time
similar
periods.
Similar themes, sure.
Yeah. And it was so striking to me, like these two women of color from different parts of the continent, two different experiences. They have so much common ground, experiences of racism and oppression and poverty and their different relationships with religion and education and the different paths that their lives took. It's so insane. I won't give away the story. I'm sure everyone knows Maya Angelou's story. She's this amazing icon. But the story of Maria Campbell is just this striking portrayal of the reality of the life of the Indigenous woman in Canada.
Wow.
It follows her from her childhood up until the age of 30. And the things like the breadth and depth of the story, how it goes from this life of living off of the land of poverty and living in like the fear of being taken away from your parents like every single day, then moving into the reality of her life in like the 60s and 70s when she moved away from her hometown into Vancouver and got involved in all of the things.
Big city stuff.
All of the big city things.
Mm. Where's she from?
She's from northern Saskatchewan, close to Prince Albert. This story, I feel like it's one of those texts that needs to be like in English classes in high school in this country.
Okay.
It's like, instead of reading like Animal Farm.
The Wars.
E.M. Yeah. Forrester bullshit.
Fucking Ethan Frome, barf. Like, read this instead and like, just.
Talk and think
talk
and learn.
Like, there's so many themes within this book that you can apply to things happening now. And it's not that it's just something that could happen to an Indigenous woman. It's the experiences that every woman has, and every Indigenous person, and any person who's experienced oppression or just
or poverty
human
or whatever
beings in general. Yeah.
Is it nonfiction?
It's a biography.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It's Marie Campbell's. It's called Half Breed. If you want it, it's all one word.
I'm gonna add it to my list. Open up my Goodreads app.
It's amazing. There's no audiobook. You just have to read it old style. Even though I would have loved to listen to her read it.
I always ask my husband if, like, I'm like, my favorite thing is podcasts and audiobooks and stuff. So if I'm too tired, but I want to, like, spend some time with him, I'm like, can you just read me my story? Read me my book out loud so I don't know.
Oh, that's so cute.
And he's always like, no. Or he'll read it, like, super, like, a super
dumb.
Yeah, I'm like, forget it. don't talk in a super dumb deep voice.
Yeah, like I had both of the books. I was listening to the audiobook while I'm working and reading the book at night and in my spare time, and it was just shocking to me, like how much they corresponded. Yeah, it was beautiful.
I recently finished a book on the same kind of note as that, by an author named Sherman Alexie, who's from the Spokane Nation down in Washington State, mm-hmm. called You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. And it's half poetry and half memoir. So
maybe like add that to your list.
I'm going to add that to my list.
And it was awesome. I just finished it last night. It was so good. About him growing up on the reserve and then turning into a urban Indian, mm-hmm. as he calls it. Like, yeah. He moves to the city and leaving his and now he's this like world famous poet and author. He travels the world and talking about like his relationship with his mother and yada, 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 yada. Fascinating, heartbreaking, full, yeah, like I said, half poetry, half autobiography. It was awesome. Sherman Alexie.
I have like a gigantic stack. I have like all of this like academic literature I want to read. Like I'm reading all of Fanon's, like Franz Fanon's work right now, Black Skin, White Mask and The Wretch of the Earth. Then I'm going to move on to Red Skin, White Mask and like all of Lee Marical's work and all that stuff, like just get like pounded like into my brain before the next collection.
There you go. Pound it in there. You should throw a novel in there too. There's some really good post-colonial novels that mm-hmm. if you want a good story as
well.
Mix
it up. Sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to read like academic things and also biography.
Yeah.
To get like, the first account and then also like the theoretical intellectual bullshit. There's just like this thing I'm thinking lately. It's like there's like this rise of indigenous intellectualism, mm-hmm. and people are really like people are sitting in conference rooms in all these places all around the country and
having symposiums
and all these
conferences.
And it's amazing for these things to be happening, but it's like a lot of the things that they have to say and the way they're saying them, it kind of distances themselves from the people who need it the most.
Sure.
Like all of these theories that everyone's coming up with about decolonial theory and how that could look in the world. This is completely off topic, but I don't know. It's just like these are like
stuff.
Two different things that are like, it's like I'm trying to like get the balance of like the first person accounts and then all of like the theory on top of that and like how that can work together.
Have you read any Thomas King? Have we talked about this before?
Thomas King.
An Inconvenient I've read a
couple.
Indian?
Yeah, I've read a couple of his books. What was the one?
It's
something about a river.
Wonderful.
I read a book.
Green Grass Running Water?
No, there was another one. I forget. Anyway, it was awesome.
Anyway, An Inconvenient Indian is those two things put together, basically. It's really, really good. After I finished reading that, I was like, every person in Canada in grade 11 should be reading this book.
Yeah,
this
there's should another be one required that's amazing too. It's from BC and it focuses
Medicine River was the one I read. That was the one.
Oh God, I can't remember what it's called. I talked about it on the podcast. It was like, there was a podcast series where they had different indigenous, like academics and musicians and actors reading a chapter from the book.
Oh, cool. Called. Oh yeah, you did mention it.
Yeah. Something I don't remember. About Unsettling Canada. That's right. What it's called.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And that's another one probably in the same vein as An Inconvenient Indian.
Awesome.
Yeah, Thomas King has a certain style that not everybody likes. I quite like it. He's quite got quite a dry sense of humor. He's he was the guy who did Dead Dog Cafe on CBC, that CBC show for a long time, which might have been before your time.
Yeah, probably.
Little wee baby. but he's a humorist and he's an academic and he's incredibly well read and easy read, makes these sort of complicated topics really accessible and easy to understand. It's really, lots of his work is really, really good. I quite enjoy it. Anyway, I'm kind of on a sideways.
That's one hell of a tangent.
Ways.
But we haven't been on one for a while.
I started The Blind Assassin last night too, and I was finished the Sherman Alexie book. I started The Blind Assassin. That's next on my list. I got literally like 5 pages in. I'm like, yeah, okay, no, I got to pay attention to this. Put the book away. Start again tomorrow.
Well, we'll talk about it when you're done. So good. I mean, I hope you enjoy it as much as I do, because otherwise it'll be a short conversation.
Well, then there you go. An Alias Gray started on TV tonight or yesterday or something.
Ooh, I'm super interested in seeing
that. CBC. I just started reading and I cannot get into it. I got to just sit down for like an hour and give it an hour's worth of time to get everybody straight. But so far I'm reading it like, you know, 2-3 pages at a time before bed and it hasn't.
It's just not happening for you?
I'll give it that. Sure. I need some more attention.
Good to know. Anyway, this has been book
time. Anyway, this has been book time.
Are we starting a Fashion Hags book club?
Oh my God, nothing would make me happier. That would be the best. I would love that.
Oh boy.
Anyway.
Let's wrap this up. We hope you found this interesting.
Because if you didn't, sorry.
This is one of those instances where we would have had this conversation even if the mics weren't rolling and we just happened to have
a little peek into
everyone's just hitting that like plus 15, plus 15, plus 15, plus 15.
Still talking about it. Oh my God. Oh boy. Well,
we should go.
You can find us in all the usual places.
Hit us up. We love it.
We love it.
You got something you think we'll like, you got a question, you got a dumb picture. We'll take all of it.
Slide into the DMs.
Yes. Tag us. Message us. Email us.
Tell your haggy friends to listen.
Spread the word. Share it on Facebook.
And write a review if you really like it. That would be really great.
That's also super helpful.
That actually helps Legit. iTunes know that like, oh, these guys aren't just fucking around. We're actually
legit. Cool. Yeah, well, my mom says we're cool. She does. My mom says we're very cool.
She does. Oh, yeah. She did say that. That's true.
Thanks, Gail.
Thanks, Gail.
yes. Well, just remember that we love you.
But we love fashion more.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey.